verse 8, and we will be there shortly. Again, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8. This morning, we are starting a new series, a series that we are calling Family, God's Big Idea. We will be looking at, through the remainder of April and in the first week of May, we will be looking at God's plan for the family. We'll be looking kind of an overview today and then specifically with each familiar relationship throughout the rest of this series. Looking at marriage, looking at parenting, looking at being a good child that honors his or her parents. And we will be looking at all of those things again over the next several weeks. Like I said, though, today we're going to start with kind of an overview, if you will. Basically, this morning we're going to talk a lot about priorities. And as I was thinking about priorities, those few big things we have in our lives that we want to fit in, regardless of what we do with everything else, I thought of an object lesson that I have seen before that might illustrate this well. As we think about the time that we have in life, we know that it's finite. We know that there's only so much time we have to give, so much resources that we have to expend in life. And so you can see that kind of metaphorically represented by this vase here. There's a finite amount of space in the vase. You can only put so much in before there is no room left. And with our life, we usually have a lot of different kind of things that we do to fill that time. Many times we'll start with some of the smaller things in life, some of the things that we would never classify as important, but certainly things that take up our time. We might think of watching our favorite show on television, browsing social media, texting friends, whatever those things might be. Again, things we wouldn't say were important, but things that certainly take up a good chunk of our time. And then, of course, we have the things that are moderately more important or sometimes significantly more important, but not the things that we would say are the top priorities in our lives. Things like our jobs, our finances, things that are certainly important and that we need, things like the activities that we enjoy, social interactions that we might have, activities that our kids participate in. And, of course, we add those to the bucket as well, filling up time as we go along. And then we have the main priorities, the big things in our life that we say anytime somebody asks us what our priorities are, we say those things are first. Things like God, our family, our church, our relationship with friends, the witness that we have to the world. And we see that if we do it in this manner, putting the big things last, that there's just not enough room for everything. And so maybe instead of putting the big things last, maybe we can start over and look at it from a completely different perspective. And so bear with me for a moment as we start over, so to speak. Again, be thinking about what areas in your life you would use to kind of go along with each of these categories. Things that are incredibly important, things that are not so important, and things that are of only moderate importance. Instead of starting with the little things, what if we started with the big things? Again, our relationship with God, our relationship with our family, our church, our witness, and our friends. If we started with that, and then we go to the idea of maybe going to the lesser important things like our job and finances, things that are certainly essential, and we can add those into the space left over from what is there with our top priorities. And it's beginning to fill up, but maybe, just maybe, we can fit in all of these other things as well, all of the little things that we, again, wouldn't deem as incredibly important, but we certainly spend our time doing. Things, again, like watching television, other sorts of entertainment, being involved in social media. And we find that if we organize things differently, that suddenly everything seems to fit perfectly. Now, here's an issue. You've probably seen this illustration before, many of you, if not most of you in the crowd this morning, have seen this illustration to one degree or another. And the illustration is good in describing the importance of putting first things first. and how other things only make sense when we think about them in relation to the most important things. But as with any illustration, the illustration falls apart. And the illustration is really a little bit too good to be true. Maybe as you're watching this illustration, or maybe if you've seen it before, first time I saw it was in a high school graduation speech many years ago. Maybe you're thinking, well, this is just too neat. This is just too perfect. Almost too good to be true. Because really the idea that this illustration puts forth is that if you just put things in the right order, everything will fit. That you will have time for everything that happens in life. This morning I'm going to contend to you that I don't like this illustration simply because it's false. It's not a reality. The things that we might say are of little importance, sometimes they don't take up the amount of time that can be represented in a grain of sand. Sometimes they take up just as much time as the big things. And maybe the things that we say are only moderately important, especially thinking about our job and our finances, those don't take up size relative to a marble. Again, when it comes to our time, they can take up just as much time as we would spend on the really, really important things. And so in reality, no matter how big things are to us priority-wise, they can take up the same amount of time as everything else. No matter how great the priority, they can still suck out our time. And so we find ourselves with things of little importance, things of big importance, things of moderate importance. And what you find in reality is that there simply is not enough room for everything. There simply is not enough room for everything to fit perfectly. The idea that if we just organize things correctly, everything in life will fit. You'll have time for absolutely everything. That if you just put your family first, everything in your job will work out like it's supposed to. If you just put God first, everything will work out in your social life like it's supposed to. That's a lie. That's simply too good to be true. Because in reality, there is only so much time that each of us have. And you don't have time for everything. What will you leave out? That's the question I want to put before you, not only today, but throughout the next several weeks. If our time is indeed limited, what is it that's going to be the thing that we leave out? We don't want that to be one of two things in the church. This church in particular, the church in general. We don't want that to be your relationship with God, and we don't want that to be your family. We don't want those to be either of the things you leave out. And that is why we will be talking about the importance of family over the next several weeks. And that is why at the end of this series on May the 1st, we will be launching a new initiative here at First Baptist, an initiative that we are calling Home Connection. So it's not a new program, but it is an intentional rethinking of everything that we do, trying to see things through the lens of the home, how we can help you as you lead people that are in your home. And this isn't just for people with kids at home. This is for anybody who has a family, whether it's family that you don't live with, that's disconnected from you by many miles, whether it's your spouse living with you, whatever it is, helping us see the way we do ministry through the lens of the home. In one phrase that we will repeat, that I will repeat over and over again, and Jared is going to fill in somewhere along the way, just depending on when Cannon arrives over the next several weeks. In one phrase that we will repeat over and over again throughout the next several weeks is this: you can do it, and we can help. We are here to resource you as ministers, as family members, to be the faith leaders of your homes, not to take over the job for you, but to prepare you so that you can take ownership of the faith development of your own home. In 1 Timothy 5, Paul, writing to Timothy, is concerning himself and concerning Timothy with a lot of the issues of the family, how to take care of different age groups within the church and within families. And he comes to this, the middle of chapter 5 in verse 8, where Paul delivers this line that is often used when we think about family, and that I couldn't help but be drawn to as we were thinking about this whole idea of the importance of the home. In 1 Timothy 5, 8, Paul writes to Timothy these words: "But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." There's a crisis present in 1 Timothy 5 that Paul is addressing. If you read the rest of the chapter, you will see that Paul is writing to Timothy mainly to instruct him on how to care for widows that are in the church, women who have no one to take care of them. In this very patriarchal society, if a woman was left alone, it was as good as being dead. She wouldn't have anybody to provide for her, no one to look after her, no one to make sure she had enough food, a place to live, all those sorts of things. And one of the things that the early church busied itself with very soon in the formation of the early church was taking care of the widows when there was no one else to take care of them. And so the solution that Paul gives to Timothy is that each family should care for its own. If there is anybody that is connected to the widow that is left alone, if there is any relative around, that relative should care for that person, that widow, so that that can take care of the issue of care for that person. And the church will step in and pick up the slack where there is slack to be picked up, where there is no family, where there is a very small family, where there is a great need that no one else can meet, the church will step in to meet that need. Later in the chapter, Paul says that if any believing widow has relatives, they ought to care for her, and that not to be the job of the church. It is each person's job to care for his or her family, and again, the church fills in the gap. We see this happen in our culture as well, in the modern day church. When a loss is experienced, again, perhaps a widow or perhaps someone else who loses a spouse or a parent or a child, the church will often step in those times to help out that individual, both with like physical things that need to happen around the house, providing with help monetarily, taking up a love offering, those sorts of things. The church will step in when help obviously needs to come in that direction. Help where it could not be received from a family member. And again, there is this idea here in Scripture that we're going to say over and over again through the next several weeks. You can do it, we can help. Paul's main goal was to have the family care for that widow. And the crisis gets compounded. Instead of there being an easy solution, which Paul delivers, each family should take care of its own, and where there is no family, the church will step in and take care of it. That's the solution to the problem. But the problem gets compounded because that's not the way, even then in the early church, that's not the way people were living. Some widows' care was being left to the church, even though they had relatives around. In chapter 1, verse 16, or in this chapter, verse 16, Paul says that when the church cares for those who have relatives, it burdens the church. And now that seems almost unfeeling, unloving for Paul to say that, but we need to understand exactly what he's saying when he says that it's a burden to the church. The point that he is drawing, that he goes on to say in that same verse, is that it's a burden to the church because the church ought to be caring for those who have no one else to care for themselves. For those widows that have no relatives around that can take care of them, that's the job of the church. That's where the church can step in, whereas the family can meet the needs of those family members that they have that are in need. And then Paul delivers that line that we focused on this morning. He says that a person who does not care for his own family has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Worse than an unbeliever. That's a big line. That's the difference between when Corbin does something wrong the first time and I get on to him, to when he does something wrong the sixth time, after I've told them five separate times not to do that thing, and then I get on to him. He knows better at that point. And as upset as I might have been the first time, when it comes to the sixth time, that's even worse because we ought to know better at that time. The very essence of our faith, as delivered by Jesus Christ, when someone asked him what's the most important thing, he said to love God and to love others. That is at the very core of who we are and who God calls us to be. The kind of faith that Jesus exemplified for all of us. And we know that. We have accepted that. We have claimed for that to be the main thing which we follow in our lives, to love God and to love people. And so when we fail to love the people that are the closest to us, Paul says, that's worse than being an unbeliever. That's worse than rejecting faith right off the bat at the very beginning. Because you go in saying everything's going to be fine, but in reality and by your actions, you reject that which you say you have accepted. Worse than an unbeliever. It's to deny the faith to deny the most important elements of who we are and what we believe. Now, it's easy to see the selfishness in the people that Paul is alluding to. They have the means to take care of their family, yet they let somebody else do it. And because they let the church do it, that depletes the church's resources to take care of those that don't have anybody to meet their needs. You can see the selfishness when we talk about monetary funds, or we talk simply about just allowing someone to have a place to live and some food to eat and enough money to get by. We can see the selfishness if somebody hoards that instead of taking care of their own. But I submit to you today that that selfishness is not gone. That we might see that selfishness in the same way when it comes to monetary things, but we also see it in a more subtle fashion in the world today. And while this might not be an easy truth to hear, I believe that it bears true in reality. That many Christians in our world today have outsourced the faith development of their family to the local church. Many families have said to the church, "Here is my family. You disciple them. You lead them to Christ. You show them what it looks like to be a young man or a young woman who follows Jesus. You teach them how to pray. You teach them how to read the Bible. You teach them how to share their faith." And while we are certainly doing those things, and we will continue to do those things, is that primarily the job of the church to teach families what it looks like to live a life in discipleship of Jesus Christ? Again, we have a crisis in our world today. Just like Paul was addressing a crisis when he talked to Timothy, we are addressing a crisis in the family today. A Lifeway study done not too long ago shows that about 70%, 7 out of every 10 young adults that spend at least a part of their childhood or teenage years, at least 1 year in fairly active church attendance, 70% of those individuals will fall away from the church. That is the current rate. They will drop out, so to speak, from church and faith life. When you look at that statistic in comparison with this one as well, that less than 10% of Christian families are having regular faith discussions in the home. Now, let me make a quick aside here. I know that when I say less than 10% of families are having faith discussions in the home, that if that statistic is true, that means that many of you are here. Many of you are among the 90% that just don't talk about it that often, that might discuss things quickly on the way home from church, but having serious, timely faith conversations at home might not be something that you do often. What I do not want you to feel is a sense of guilt. Guilt gets you absolutely nowhere. Shame gets you absolutely nowhere. But I hope that this motivates you. I hope that this gives you an idea of what could be instead of what is. Even for many of the most church-active families in the church today, people who never miss a Sunday, even for many of them, the faith development of the family is seen solely as the job of church and the professionals at church. And so let me say unequivocally this morning, it is your job, family members, people of the church, it is your job to lead your family towards discipleship, not the church's. We are here to help with that job. We are here to resource you with that job. But it is ultimately your calling, your duty, to raise your family in a way that they will honor and love and pursue Jesus Christ as Lord. So that's the crisis. We have people that are falling away more so than we have ever had in the church. The solution, the same as it was with Paul. Families care for their own. Families that view spiritual care for each other as a top priority. Families that have faith conversations. Families that have regular times of reading the Bible, devotion, and prayer. Families that simply make time for each other. That look at how much time they have and say, "I'm not going to be able to fit everything, and so I'm going to say no to some things so that I can say yes to the faith development of my family." If we were to take honest stock of ourselves in 2016 church world, and we were to ask ourselves, what is it that we leave out of the bucket What is it that we say we don't have time for? Even the people who define themselves as Christians. And again, I know this isn't the thing you wanted to hear. It isn't going to make you feel all warm and fuzzy. But even the thing that we say we believe the most, that we say is top priority, is God and our family. If we say that those things are the top priority, I think we would be shocked if we took stock of our own lives and decided, are we making space for that? Or is there so much other stuff, so many other things that we're doing, so many activities that our kids are involved in, so much time that our work is demanding of us, that we have no time left for the most important things? And so we tell ourselves this story that if we just organize it correctly, everything will fit. No, it will not. In a world that is as busy as our world is today, you have to say no to some things. There is simply not enough time in every day for you to do absolutely everything that you want to. Absolutely everything that is offered on your plate. What do you want to make sure is in the bucket? And what are you willing to leave out? The church is here to fill in the gaps. You can do it. We can help. We can provide the training and the resources for you as you lead your families. We can provide specific biblical guidance and teaching for your family so that when you all gather together to have these conversations that you need to be having, you will have starting points. You will have touchstones. You will have things and situations that you have shared together, experiences about what God is doing in this church, abroad, to share together so that you might lead them into your family and they can inject your family with spiritual energy as you grow closer to Jesus Christ together. And just like with Paul, the crisis gets compounded. The faith development of the family has long been, for many decades at this point, has long been outsourced to the church. Now, here's the issue that we have. A lot of times when we see those numbers about 70% falling away, we think about what the church needs to do better. And trust me, as church leadership, we ask ourselves those questions at least weekly, if not daily. We have a staff meeting every Tuesday, and almost every Tuesday, not almost, every time we gather together as a staff, we are thinking about things that we can do better to curb that number, to bring it down, to make it all the way to zero. We're foolish enough to think that big, that we can make it where everyone that we have connections with, that we lead to faith, will stay in the faith. And we're not the only church asking ourselves these questions. We're not the only church challenging ourselves to get better. The truth is that the church today, the church in our country today, is more innovative than it has ever been. We are doing more and more to be as relevant as we can possibly be. From the mega churches to the little churches to the medium churches, we are all doing different things, trying to inject different programs, different forms of life into our church so that the rise of the people who don't believe in God or the people who fall away from the church after being raised there, so that those numbers decline. We are more innovative than we have ever been. Think about the things like Right Now Media. Think about the kind of small group, the Sunday school teaching that we offer. We have a ninja, for goodness sake. We're more innovative than we have ever been. We are working harder than we have ever worked as a church. We are spending more money and proportioning or positioning more of our budget than we ever have towards children and youth ministries and the church as a whole. The churches with large means will build entire complexes just for youth and children. And so it's not because we're not spending enough money, or it's not because we are not trying hard enough to be relevant. It's not because we're not trying hard enough to be creative or innovative. It's because we have looked in the wrong spot. It's because we have strengthened the wrong thing in order to solve the problem. We need to strengthen the church with everything that we have. But with the time that we have as a church, and especially the time that Amy and Jared have with many of your children, it comes up to just a couple, maybe 3 hours a week. 3 hours a week can be undone incredibly fast. What happens on Wednesday night can be undone by an argument at home on Thursday. What happens on Sunday morning can be undone by a bully saying mean things on Monday. And the time that we have is important, and we are putting everything we have into it. But we do so realizing that if we do it without the support of the family, we will fail. If we do it without there being a transformation in the home, most likely statistics bear out that we will not succeed. Because no matter how hard we try, no matter how much money we spend, no matter how creative or innovative we are, the problem remains. The number does not decrease. If anything, it only increases. So let me, for a second, I've been on you for a while, let me confess on behalf of the church and on behalf of church leadership. We love programs. We love to push programs, things that we can do as a church. And not only that, we get sometimes get our self-pride wrapped up in that. We love numbers. We put them on boards. We make sure we report them to the convention. We ask other pastors when we meet them, or at least I get asked a lot. I try not to ask it, but one of the first questions that I'm often asked, what does your church run? What kind of programs do you offer? Do you have small groups? We love programs. Sometimes to the point that we kill families with busyness in the church. That in an already busy world, a lot of times the church only adds another thing for you to do. And so this morning I'm going to say very plainly, the faith development that happens in your family is more important than the faith development that happens in this building. This is incredibly important. But if your family is going to be transformed by the renewing of their mind into the image of Jesus Christ, it is most likely going to start at home, not in a church service, not in a church program. The blunt truth is that the stakes are high. And if faith is not shared and nurtured at home, statistics tell us that it will most likely die. Again, I'm not saying that because I want things to be that way. I'm saying that because that's the way things are. Almost all studies done on this topic show that when faith is not developed at home, faith dies in a family. It is not the church's job to spiritually nourish your family. It is not the church's job to make sure your husband feels respect. It is not the church's job to make sure that your wife feels loved. It is not the church's job to make sure that your kids feel loved and cared for and nurtured. It is not your church's job to make sure that your children value the Bible and value devotional time and value prayer. It is not the church's job to make sure that your elderly parents are cared for, that someone goes by and sees them every now and then. We do those things. We believe that is our calling, but ultimately that duty falls primarily on you. Falls primarily on the family. And the good news is this. The promise I give you this morning is this. God has empowered you. God has empowered the family to succeed. God has built our world, our society in such a way. He started with the basic building blocks of family, and he did it for a reason. All the way back to the very beginning, God has empowered families to make a difference. Families to nurture the faith in the next generation. The spirit and love of God dwells within each of you who follow after Jesus Christ. And because of that, I know, since God has empowered you, I know and can say with firm conviction that when it comes to the faith development of your family, you can do it and we can help. On May the 1st, when we launch our Home Connection Ministry, you'll see that one of the main things of this ministry is to resource you, is to provide you with opinions that are not our own, or really that a lot of things that are biblically based and aren't necessarily opinion, but a lot of things that are help for different elements that you might be handling in your family's life. Whether it's dealing with a rebellious teenager, whether it's dealing with a child with special needs, working through a time of conflict in your marriage, trying to heal from a divorce, we will resource you with these things. We will provide an opportunity and a place, an actual physical location in the church where you can come and find resources along these things. We will increase our training. We will make sure that we look at everything that we do through the lens of empowering you as a family. And at least a couple of times every year, if not several times every year, we will actually put things in your hand that you can do with your families, like having game nights or having family nights or talking about the kind of faith conversations you can have at home. Little recipe cards that describe exactly how those things will work. I pledge to you as your pastor that I'm not as important as you are when it comes to the faith development of your family. Jared, Amy, Sunday school teachers, none of us have the potential to impact your family like you do. None of us do. And it would be a waste of our time to try to take over your role. And so what we see ourselves as and what we want to become is a church that reminds you that you can do it and we can help. We can come alongside you as you take ownership of the faith development of your family. And as we together, as families connecting to each other, connecting to our community, and most importantly, connecting to Jesus here in this community, here in this church, as we come together, I believe, and I don't think this is blind optimism, I believe that God can and will do this if we follow him with the same sense of passion that we want to follow him. If we put the first things first and then say no to the rest, if we own the faith development of our own families, and if we come together to support each other in that faith development, I believe we can curb that number. I believe that at the end of my child's generation, by the time we have him raised, I believe that we can be below 50%, below 40%, below 30%. I believe that we can be in a time in the world, in the time in the history of the church where we see people, we see Americans in particular, take ownership of their faith again. To not outsource it to a church, to not outsource it to some guy that they listen to on podcasts or some books that they're going to read that they picked up at Lifeway or Family Christian, but to view their faith development is something that is between them and God and that they need to take ownership in their own families. And if we do that, and only if we do that, only if we realize that it starts at home, will we see the number change? Will we see things improve? Will we see our country come back to Jesus? But if we have all of these other things in our way and our family and our faith is what gets left out, nothing will change. Things will only get worse. But I believe they will get better. And I believe your family is where that starts. This morning during our time of invitation, I encourage you to think about how this applies to you in whatever life situation you are in. Whether you have kids at home, whether your kids are grown, whether you've never been married, whatever situation that you are in. How is God calling you to develop the faith in your family, your siblings, your parents, your children, your grandchildren, not just the people that you live with, but your family, your home? How is God calling you to lead out in that faith development? If you want to pray about this or anything else, I will be down here to do that with you this morning. The altar is open if you would like to pray there, and know that I'm here after the service if you'd like to talk then as well. Let's stand together. I'm going to pray. You move in whatever way God is calling. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this morning. God, we thank you for your son Jesus, and we thank you for saving each of us that call upon you as Savior. God, I pray that you would work in us as families and family leaders to curb the statistic, to not become the statistic. God, I pray that you would call us back to our first love, to our ultimate priorities, and show us how to make time because there isn't enough time to go around. God, I pray for myself in particular that you would lead me to disciple my family before I disciple this church. And God, that you would lead everyone else to have that same mentality. God, start at home and change the church through the family. I pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Have thine own way.